Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the ABN AMRO Interim Financial Results Analyst Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Friday, 24th of August 2012, at 1:30 p.m. UK time. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Khalid Salem. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Good afternoon and welcome to our investor call on the half-year results. I'm joined by Jan van Rutte and Fred Bos, our deputy CRO, who will take over in a minute. I'll give a short introduction on the results. Over the first half-year, we have reported an underlying profit of 827 million. We use the word underlying results, thereby excluding the integration-related cost, and that allows a better comparison of the results over time. I think we have a satisfactory result given the challenging economic circumstances. If we divide the underlying profit on equity, we have a return on equity of 14%, which is in present times a very reasonable number. As you know, over 80% of our business is based in the Netherlands, so we are strongly exposed to the developments in the Dutch economy. We see Dutch GDP growth as stagnant, consumer confidence is still low, housing market is declining, and unemployment, although at a low level, is rising. Maybe most telling is that the number of corporate bankruptcies has seen an increase of 25% over the last year, and of course we feel the impact on our business on a daily basis. This economic headwind results in increased provision levels for loan impairments. Total loan impairments for the first half year amounted to 554 million. That's quite an increase of 244 million compared to last year. Of course, these impairment levels have been strongly impacted by the current economic environment. Looking at our operating result, we show a modest improvement, and that shows that the business activities our bank is involved in are still going well. We are an all-round bank in the Netherlands, and a significant part of our business is bread and butter banking activities. The improvement in our operating results is also due to the cost containment and achieving of integration synergies. Cost containment is now fully ingrained in how we manage the bank, and this has resulted in an improved cost-income ratio. We are now at 59% over the first half year. The integration process is nearing completion, and we are quite on track. We expect to finish all client-related projects by the end of the year, and also within the stated budget of 1.6 billion. Looking at the development of our capital position, our Core 1 ratio increased to currently 11.9%, and that's 1.2% higher than last year. And of course, this improvement is mainly because of the settlement of a legal dispute with Ageas. We are very happy that this complex legal matter is settled and behind us. Jan will talk more in detail on it. We also concluded that we will not pay interim dividend. We think we should take a very prudent position. We are close to switching to Basel III, and all the definitions are not clear yet. We are also close to introducing new IFRS regulation regarding pension funds that may also have an impact. And of course, the economic situation is also rather uncertain. What is clear that we will target under the Basel III regime for a common equity tier 1 ratio of above 10% from 2013 on. With regard to funding, we have been able to tap long-dated unsecured funding. Although we also issued secured funding, our primary funding source over the first half year has in fact been unsecured. And last but not least, we were also able to tap subordinated funding, witness our 10-year lower tier 2 transaction issued in July. A few words I'd like to spend on customer excellence. We have done a lot of work internally to make the organization more effective, and customer excellence is one of the major programs we started last year. It is a program looking at customer focus on the one hand and creating more efficiency on the other hand, and I'm very encouraged by the results we are seeing. The program has initiated many changes in the way people work, leading to more efficient work processes, faster client satisfaction, and importantly also enthusiastic reaction from our employees. Once all our departments have experienced the first customer excellence wave, we will repeat the program, but that then going across departmental boundaries. I think looking at the positive results we see up till now in the first phase, I'm also have high expectations for the second wave, which will concern our total organization. Finally, something on our expectations for the remainder of the year. We are always very careful with these kind of statements, as not realizing raised expectations leads to frustration. As Benjamin Franklin said, "Nothing is certain but death and taxes." In the second half of the year, we'll certainly see taxes going up because the Dutch banking tax will be implemented, and that will lead to a lower net profit of approximately 100 million. In addition, we expect that loan impairments will be higher in the second half of the year compared to the first half. I'll now hand over to Jan, who will discuss the financials in more detail. Jan.
Okay, thank you very much. Indeed, I will lead you more in detail through the figures. I would like to point out that we published a short analyst call presentation on our website this morning. And during this call, we will be following, or at least I will try to follow, this presentation. Our full investor presentation will be published later today. Now turning to, let me see, slide three, you can see, and Gerrit mentioned this already, we posted a net underlying profit for the period of 827 million, which is a decline of 15%, 1.5, compared to the first half of 2011. The profit is the result of a slight increase of 4% in our operating result, which was, however, more than offset by an increase in loan impairments. The underlying cost-income ratio was 59% for the first half of 2012, coming from 63% in the first half of 2011. Should be noticed that the banking tax, and Gerrit mentioned that already, is not included in the cost yet, as this will come into force on the 1st of October, so will be taken in the fourth quarter this year. Including the banking tax, the cost-income ratio over the first 6 months would have been 60. As to the development of the cost-income ratio, I would like to mention that we started in 2010 with the new bank with a cost-income ratio of 70%. 2011 ended up with 64%, and the first 6 months of this year we ended with 59%. So I think we are well on the way to reach our target to become or to be structurally below 60%. Furthermore, I think it's useful to note that any comparison with the 2011 figures is impacted by a number of divestments made in the latter half of 2011. The main divestments were, and we mentioned it before, of course, Swiss private banking activities and the international division of former Fortis Commercial Finance, and both divestments were completed in October 2011. And these divestments had an impact on revenues and on cost, and only a slight impact on the comparisons of net profit. But as an example, operating income decreased 7%. However, adjusted for divestment, the decrease is only 4%. Underlying operating expenses decreased by 14%, 1.4. And here the comparison with previous year is not only impacted by divestments, but also from the 200 million restructuring charge taken in the first half of 2011. Excluding these factors, expenses were unchanged year-on-year. Loan impairments increased by 244 million, almost 80%, to 554 million. We saw a large number of large provisions taken in the second quarter, which also explains the lower underlying profit compared to the first quarter, as can be seen from the figures. If you look at the figures, the net interest income in the first quarter was a little bit higher, mainly because of growth in the commercial loan portfolio. Net fee and commission income in the second quarter was lower, just because of lower volumes at the stock exchanges, and non-other operating income was somewhat lower because of some special items. Now, touching briefly on the reported result, this amounted, and Gerard mentioned it already, 743 million and includes 84 million net of tax integration expenses. Integration indeed on track, and we expect to finalize client-related projects in 2012 within the budget of 1.6 million. To date, 1.3 billion of integration costs have been made. We expect another 300 million to go for the remainder of the year. Now moving to, let me see, slide four. I will discuss the P&L movements more in detail. Looking first at interest income, this declined by 1% excluding divestments. Including divestments of 2%, excluding divestment 1%. Main reasons are the decline in interest results of around 70 million in group functions, and this is partly due to higher funding costs. Furthermore, net interest income in retail banking declined by approximately 50 million because of lower margins on savings compared to 2011, even though we managed to increase the volume of retail savings by 4 billion. What we see that the competition for deposit eased somewhat as of Q2, as lower interest rates have led all banks to lower their rates on saving products and including the so-called price fighters. Interest income in private banking, however, increased as clients switched out of investments and went into cash. We have seen this trend over the last few quarters, and though positive for interest income, it has a negative effect on fee income because of lower transaction volumes. The preference for cash we also see in the developments in our assets under management, which showed 2.3 billion of net new assets, which mainly comprised of cash. In total, assets under management increased by 8.4 billion to 155 billion because of, on average, higher market valuation of the securities under management. Now over to non-interest income. In general, we see lower transaction volumes due to the general markets uncertainty. This has had a marked effect on our fee and commission income, which has shown a decline of 12%, again, excluding divestments. This decline in transaction volume also continued in the first half of the year, with Q2 fee income again lower than in Q1. However, fee income did grow within merchant banking because of good business growth within ECT, our energy, commodities, and transportation business. As a matter of fact, the operating income of merchant banking showed the highest growth of all the business segments. Other non-interest income was down 9%, mainly because of lower results related to hedge accounting and negative credit value adjustments in Q2, and this was all due to the development of the interest rates over the last few months. Finally, we have seen releases in the so-called credit umbrella in 2012, not in 2011, which has mitigated the decline in non-interest income. As you will remember, the credit umbrella is the guarantee given over the loan portfolio, which was sold to Deutsche Bank as a part of the remedy actions, which were imposed by the European Committee for the merger of Fortis and ABN AMRO in the Netherlands. Now we move to slide five, some words about operating expenses. Slide five shows our underlying operating expenses that they decreased by 14.14%. However, when excluding, and I mentioned this already, both the impact of divestments as well as the 200 million restructuring charge, costs were unchanged. And story is the same for personnel expenses, which saw an 18.18% decline year on year, but is flat when these corrections are made. And though FTEs declined over and above staff reductions from integration, this did not lead to a reduction in personnel costs because of structural wages increases, such as salary, the annual salary grade increase on the 1st of April in our company, and because of higher social security charges. And as Gerrit already mentioned, the underlying cost-income ratio as a result of this improved to 59%. Moving to impairment charges, which is still on the same slide, in slide five, all segments showed higher provisions compared to the first half of 2011. In fact, all industry sectors are suffering. However, construction, commercial real estate, and retail are performing worst, with additional provisions taken within commercial banking and private banking. Of the segments, merchant banking showed the biggest increase in impairments, but this is partly because of releases booked in 2011. And before questions pop up, the 106 million provisions taken in merchant banking over the first half 2012 includes the provision for Vestia, the social housing corporation, which was in the news in the beginning of the year. Impairment charges on mortgages increased somewhat up to 11 basis points for the first half this year, and a trend which continued into Q2. Note that we generally see a seasonal increase in loan impairments for the latter half of the year. We mentioned this already earlier, particularly in commercial banking. We expect loan impairment for the second half of 2012 to be higher than for the first half. And Fred Bos will discuss the portfolio developments in further detail later on. Now, moving on to the balance sheet, it's slide six, yes. The next slide, I will only focus on some main items. Compared to year-end, total assets grew by just under 17.17 billion to 421 billion. And this increase was mainly because of seasonal growth in the securities financing activities and because of rebuilding our activities in New York. In total, 9.5 billion increase in loans and receivables is due to securities financing. With total loans, which means banks and customers for securities financing represents a significant part of the balance sheet. However, all these loans are fully collateralized, mainly by cash and partly by highly liquid securities. In addition, I think it's important to mention that securities financing activities are mainly client-driven, meaning that in general, a repo or securities lending transaction is matched by a reversed repo or security borrowing transaction. And this is evidenced by 7.4 billion gross of securities financing liabilities. The customer loan portfolio, excluding securities financing, increased by 6.8 billion, mainly because of growth in merchant banking, though commercial banking also showed some growth. Our mortgage portfolio remained virtually constant at 155 billion. We have seen our market share increasing for new production as a result of several competitors taking a step back. This, by the way, has had a positive impact on margins. The general decline in housing transactions in the Netherlands, however, dampens the effect of an increased market share. The trend in our mortgage portfolio over the last 2.5 years has been a very gradual decline, and we expect this to continue given the current developments, such as a decline in house prices and a move away from interest-only mortgages to annuity-type products. Finally, the asset side, the consumer loans decreased, which is a typical effect for the second quarter as households use holiday payments to reduce the borrowing. At the liability side, we also see the effects of the holiday of the payments on the customer deposits. In total, we saw a growth in customer deposits of just under 8 billion. The largest inflow was seen in retail, with just over 4 billion, mainly because of the holiday allowances and because of the growth in our online banking label MoneyU in Germany. MoneyU had a successful start in Germany, where we managed to raise 3 billion in deposits by the end of June. And we're happy to announce that in September we will also roll out MoneyU in Belgium. Private banking, meanwhile, showed deposit inflow of just over 3 billion. I mentioned that already in part. This is due to clients switching from securities to cash, a move we see in particular with our international private banking clients. On the corporate side, we saw no major movements. The decrease in issued debt of 1.7 billion is due to a reduction in our short-term funding. And looking to subordinated liabilities, these showed a decrease of 1 billion, mainly because of the cancellation of the 2 billion MCS liability. Gerrit mentioned this already. Now, part of the dispute involved the 2 billion mandatory convertible instrument, or the MCS. And previously, the remaining MCS liability counted towards hybrid Tier 1 capital. Now, following the settlement, this liability was cancelled, leading to an increase in common equity. And as you have read, as a cash payment of 400 million was made to Ageas, therefore the net increase in equity amounted to 1.6 billion due to the settlement. Equity, in fact, increased by 2.1 billion, apart from the MCS, thanks to the 743 million reported net profit. A few words on capital and RWA. Looking now at the developments in our regulatory capital position, as we already mentioned, the MCS settlement plays a major role there. As a result, our core Tier 1 ratio showed a large improvement of 1.2% and ended up at 11.9 at the half-year point. Tier 1 and total capital did not improve from the settlement. In fact, the settlement with Ageas had a slight negative impact of 150 million on Tier 1 and total capital. This is the net effect of the cash payment of 400 million and 250 million haircut, which was previously applied already, reasons of prudency, to the hybrid Tier 1 eligibility of the MCS. Other developments as to capital ratio, the Tier 1 and total capital ratio declined as a result of the 5% increase in RWAs, 6 billion, and the increase is because of the anticipated transition, mainly because of the anticipated transition from standardized to advanced approach for operational and market risk, and is not because of increased risk-taking within markets. Credit risk was virtually flat. Where we still want to improve from current level is on our total capital ratio. This would amount to 13.1% under the phased-in approach of Basel III, and based, of course, on our half-year results. However, since the end of June, we have, and Gerard mentioned this also already, we have issued a 1 billion lower Tier 2 instrument, which is expected to qualify under CRD4 Directive Transitional Regime, and so thereby aiding our total tier capital position as of January the 1st. Liquidity, and now slide 9. ABN AMRO holds a liquidity buffer of over 52 billion, and as can be seen from the table on page 9, the buffer has declined compared to year-end. At the time, the market was suffering from heightened volatility, which led us to hold an additional cash buffer. And this component was run down at the beginning of the year. We have not shown this time any updates for Basel III liquidity parameters in the interim statements. Simply, we have, however, made restatement to the year-end figures of the LCR, the year-end figures 2011, to 57% following a recent recalculation of the regulatory reporting. However, this has not changed our aim to reach an LCR ratio of 100% during 2013, somewhere in 2013, as stated before. However, we cannot be more precise with regard to the timing as we are still awaiting clarity regarding eligibility of the retained RMBS notes for the LCR. To finalize with a few words about funding, well, the main source of funding for ABN AMRO is through customer deposits. The balance stood at 188 billion as of June, which is a growth of 8 billion from year-end. And I mentioned this already, growth in deposits was mainly seen in retail and private banking clients, but also from commercial banking clients. As a result, the loan-to-deposit ratio improved by 1 percentage point to 129%, despite some growth in the commercial loan book. In the first half, 10.7 billion was raised in long-term wholesale funding with an average maturity of 6.2 years. Leading to an increase of the average maturity of the wholesale funding from 3.6 years to 4.1 years. In fact, a total of 3.9 billion long-term funded was issued in July and August, and all long-term funding maturing in 2012 was in principle refinanced already by April. And further funding raised thereafter will be used primarily to pre-finance 2013. Well, I'd like to finish my presentation here and would like to hand over to Fred.
Yes, okay. Jan, thank you very much. This time we have published more interim risk figures, something I know quite a number of you have been asking for. If we turn to slide number 12, we look at the portfolio performance. First, looking at the impaired and past due ratios of the portfolio on slide 12, we see at first glance a mixed picture, and a few words of explanation is needed. The slide shows the impaired ratio. The total impaired portfolio increased only by 124 million to 8.7 billion from December 2011. Excuse me. However, loan impairments over this period amounted to 554 million, which we see as a reflection of the deteriorating economic circumstances in the Netherlands, where the majority of our exposure lies. For commercial loans, we see a decline in both the impaired as well as the past due ratio. This decline does not signal an improvement in the health of the Dutch companies. Rather, it is mainly the result of the growth in securities finance positions of approximately 9.5 billion, as mentioned by Jan earlier. Securities financing had virtually no impaired loans, and therefore any growth will, all other factors being equal, lower the risk ratios. The absolute amount of impaired commercial loans remained unchanged at 6.6 billion. Under the current economic outlook, we expect this to increase towards the end of the year, also because of seasonality. The absolute amount of commercial loans past due has decreased somewhat, from 1.1 billion to 800 million. This is due to tightened control of credit files. The coverage ratio for commercial loans remained almost unchanged at 69%. Just a few words on commercial real estate. Our exposure is limited to approximately 3% of total EAD of the portfolio. Note that this includes both commercial real estate as well as real estate for own use. The majority of the exposures consist of investment financing with limited exposure to offices and land. Following a screening of our commercial real estate portfolio, where we assessed both the quality of the borrower as well as the underlying assets, we have taken an additional IPNI, so a more general charge of 44 million euro. As a result, the ratio of impairment charges over EAD increased to 6.7% at 30th of June this year, compared to 5.3 at the year end. Finally, briefly looking at other consumer loans, these showed a marginal increase in the impaired and past due ratios, a development in line with the Dutch economy. Note, however, that this portfolio is significantly smaller than mortgages or commercial loans. A few words about our mortgages in slide 13. The average loan-to-value currently stands at 79%, and that's compared to last year, an increase of 2% from 77%. Compared to other countries, the loan-to-value ratio is higher, which is one of the main reasons Dutch mortgages are followed with keen interest by investor and analyst yourselves. The tax structure in the Netherlands has favored maximizing the use of a mortgage to purchase residential property from the standpoint of a home buyer. However, many features of the Dutch mortgage and housing market mitigate the risk from a standpoint of the bank. For example, the maximum mortgage of a home buyer may obtain has always been subject to sound underwriting policies based on capping the monthly mortgage interest payments as a percentage of disposable income. Furthermore, the bank has full recourse to the borrowers on default, which forms a severe disincentive for borrowers to default on their mortgage payments. In addition, generous unemployment benefits allows a considerable number of people to continue to service their mortgage payments even when temporarily unemployed. Around 22% of the residential mortgage portfolio is guaranteed by the Dutch government agency, so-called NHG. For new mortgage production, more than 50% falls under the guarantee as a result of the raised cutoff amount, a measure taken by the government in response to the financial crisis. The total impaired ratio is unchanged at 0.9% from year end. We have seen an improvement in the past due ratio due to improved measures in late collections. Of course, the combination of declining house prices and increasing unemployment does not leave us unaffected. House prices have on average declined 6.3% over the last 12-month period. This has led to a modestly higher proportion of mortgages in the higher loan-to-value buckets compared to the beginning of the year. The impairment charges on mortgages over total book have increased from 8 to 11 basis points year on year. With the economic situation not looking to improve anytime soon, and the political uncertainty regarding the interest tax deductibility putting further pressure on house prices, the trend is for impairments to increase further from the current low levels. This concludes for now my overview from a risk management perspective. I pass you back to Gerrit.
Okay, thank you, Fred. Just a few concluding remarks. I'd like to reiterate that we are satisfied with our results so far over 2012, given the external circumstances we find ourselves in. The challenging circumstances look to continue a while longer. We expect loan impairments to increase for the remainder of the year, and I would therefore caution you against extrapolating our results so far for the remainder of the year. Nonetheless, in the areas we have under control, we deliver on our promises. The integration of our two banks, which in total will take us 2.5 years to complete, is on track and also within budget. Our costs are under control, and we are showing a significant improvement of our cost-income ratio. So far our presentation, and I'd like to ask the operator now to open the line for questions.
Thank you, sir. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash or pound key. Your first question comes from Cor Kluis. Please ask your question.
Good afternoon, Cor Kluis of Rabobank. I've got a few questions. First of all, concerning the merchant bank, we saw that the number of FTEs was rising there by 125. 50% was due to RBS team and 60 are from the foreign offices. Can you indicate where that growth is, in which activity lines and in which locations? And what your further plans are in that field of acquisition, in that field of expansion. My second question is about the tax rate. The tax rate continues to be quite low. Can you give an idea or a guidance going forward about what kind of tax rate we have to think and why that is? My last question is about the interim dividend. I was a little bit surprised that you don't pay an interim dividend. You do reserve for it, but you don't pay it, given your good solvency situation, even in the Basel III. Can you explain a little bit more why that is? Do you really expect a very strong deterioration of the economy, or are there other reasons for that? That were my questions.
I'll take the first and last, and tax will be done by Jan. The expansion in the merchant bank is especially in our ECT activities, where the former Fortis organization had a far larger portfolio than we still have now. So we get a lot of return of clients and without taking risks we cannot accept. We can grow there quite fast, but we also need then extra staffing. As far as the interim dividend, that's a matter of cautiousness. We can always decide on January or February on dividend. But there are, as I mentioned, there are at least three kinds of uncertainty, economic situation uncertainty, the impact of the new IFRS regulation, and also the impact of the Basel III regulation, where there are still uncertainties also because there's no final decision yet on that. And in those circumstances, we thought it would be wise to postpone a decision on dividend to the beginning of next year, where there's far more clarity about how the situation looks. Tax rate, Jan.
Yeah, the main reason for the tax rate, thank you, Fred. The main reason is indeed an increase in tax exempt gains. And the most important one of that is what I mentioned is the credit umbrella. So the gains from the credit umbrella, they are net of tax. And that's also because we took by the time that the guarantee also had to be taken net of tax. So that's the main reason.
And sorry, and the guidance forward for the tax rate?
Just let's say normal rates. We have our profits not only in the Netherlands, of course, but also outside of the Netherlands. About 20% of our results are outside of the Netherlands with other tax regimes. But we do not foresee specific developments now for the tax rates. But this is a specific situation. And if there are more releases in future, of course, this will have the same impact on the tax rate.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel the request, please press the hash or pound key. Your next question comes from Heini Hacker. Please ask your question.
Yeah, good afternoon. It's Heini Hacker from Kempen in Amsterdam. I had a few questions, if I may. First of all, on this umbrella releases, could you indicate what type of amounts are involved? And also, I was a bit surprised by it because we see a general deterioration in your asset quality and higher loan impairments, and yet you have releases there from the credit umbrella, so the guarantee you gave to Deutsche Bank, the buyer of the asset. So if you could clarify there a bit. My second question was related to your outlook for the loan loss provisioning. You're a bit cautious there, and I was wondering if that is in specific areas, because the first half also includes this kind of cleanup, 44 million for commercial real estate, and yet you expect you continue to hint at higher loan loss charges going forward. So I was wondering in which areas you are particularly concerned about, also as your past due numbers and you impaired ratios do not show a very sharp deterioration. And my third question was on your liquidity management and what it means. You indicate an available liquidity buffer of 53 billion, which is a bit on the low end relative to other banks compared to your short-term liabilities. But to what extent does that include ECB eligible assets? So in other words, assets that you can easily borrow against from the ECB, or to what extent can you easily create assets that you can borrow against from the ECB? Thank you.
Okay, let's start with the first question on the credit umbrella.
Yeah, maybe I shall answer that.
Okay.
We released in Q1 and Q2 for a total amount of approximately 120 million from the provision. That is partly due to our modeling we use on this portfolio, but also because there is a rapid decline of the portfolio which covers the umbrella.
Is there more to come or?
We don't know, we hope, but we can't say. It's really depending on the development of the economy, of course. But it follows our outlook over the rest of the year.
As far as the expectation of increased impairments, there are actually two reasons to expect that. The first reason is that we see a kind of seasonal pattern. First quarter is always low on impairments, and the last quarter is always high on impairments. So given the fact that the first half year has a low first quarter, the second half year will probably be higher. And also in more general terms, we don't see yet a strong improvement of the Dutch economy. And so the tendency of high loan impairments is expected to continue. We don't, in this expectation, there's not a special sectoral split.
Do you have any concerns about your merchant bank activity, shipping, transportation, that type of things? I think you're currently still very low, or is that
very low, but it's traditionally very low because it's specialized, the business with very good risk management. So we have also in the past and also during the problems in the markets in 2008 and 2009, impairments rates were very much under control. Now liquidity?
Yeah, liquidity. As a matter of fact, you had two questions. First of all, what was the buffer? Well, that should not be in line with other banks. I think the liquidity, or we think that the liquidity certainly is in line with other banks, and we do a lot of peer analysis as well. But compared with other banks, we think we have a relatively high buffer even. And your second question about the buffer for ECB, well, there is still a buffer of 28 billion for RMBS.
That are assets that are yet not eligible for ECB.
Yeah, correct.
That can be easily.
That can be used for, yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Is there another question?
Your next question comes from Anke Reininger. Please ask your question.
Yes, Anke Reininger here from RBC. I had actually two follow-up questions. The first one is again on asset quality and following up on a previous question, because your trends on past due loans in the first half, they actually don't really indicate such a fast deterioration also as we've seen at other banks. So is more what you've seen in July and August one of the reasons for your cautious outlook statement? And also just wondering how you basically going to, are you responding? Are you asking for more collateral on the mortgages side, or what's your main tool here? And secondly, on the liquidity coverage ratio under Basel III, your revision from to 57% as of year end 2011, is there any particular driver, or is it just you basically looking again and how you would come to the number? And also the 100% by year end 2011 seems quite challenging. What's the cost of getting to the 100% in terms of buying lower or basically shifting probably towards lower yielding assets? Thank you.
Yes, maybe I can take the first question. That is about the development in the past due ratios. As I mentioned briefly, we have really tightened our credit management, in particular in mortgages and SME banking, and that has led to a decrease in the past due ratio. Still, the outlook is not very bright for the remaining part of the year, and let me focus on two areas. First of all, the mortgages. As we see, the house price is still declining, and unemployment is increasing. we have certainly proactively taken measurements there to improve further the risk management, particularly in the first line on the business. There is much more focus now on risk management than really acquisition. We have our program which is called Care-Free Living, Zorgvrij Wonen, where we approach our clients with a very high loan-to-value, and we discuss possibilities for early redemptions or other measurements. In the SME business, also there, we have intensified our risk management, both in the first and second line, with quite substantial programs for our account managers to increase the monitoring of the credit files.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry.
Sorry. Yeah. There was a second question about the recalculation of the LCR, but we did indeed make a different calculation where we applied strict stress scenarios. We made recalculations for collateral, and we excluded certain assets, resulting in a different LCR of 57%. And indeed, as you mentioned, it will be a challenge to get to 100% by the end of 2013. Of course, the question is still whether RMBS are eligible. That's also part of the discussion. But we are taking this into account when doing our pre-funding for 2013.
Okay. But yeah, have you made any estimate at how much it's going to cost you in terms of earnings?
No, not yet. Of course, we have our funding plan based on expectations on the spread we have to pay, but it's too early to mention this. No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. There another question?
Your next question comes from Martin Altena. Please ask your question.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my questions. I have three questions, and the first is on the net interest margin. As your net interest income remained rather strong, and you also mentioned somewhat easing saving markets as of the second quarter. So I was wondering whether you expect the net interest margin to have bottomed out in the first half of this year, or that you expect a further decline in the second half of 2012. The second one is on the Core Tier 1 ratio, as you expect this to be at least 10% as of 2013. Will it be due to retained earnings, or should we also expect a significant RWA release? And the third one is on Dutch mortgages. We have seen several estimates in the market where house prices would go to in the coming years. And I was basically wondering, what is your view for the coming 2 years on house prices? Do you also envisage 5 to 6% decrease, or do you see it differently? Thanks.
Okay, at least four questions. So,
let me take the first. Interest rate margins and what will happen in the second half of the year. Of course, nobody can make exact predictions. Still, the savings markets are a bit unpredictable how our competitors will operate. So we did not make any statement on our expectations in that field. We hope, of course, that also the margin on savings will help us, but we are not sure about that. Maybe you take the second on the...
On the Core Tier 1, as you mentioned. Well, the Core Tier 1, as you have seen in the presentation, in the press release, in the phased-in approach, we expect a Core Tier 1 of 10.8 based on our results and balance sheet of June to the end of the year. You know, on the Basel 3, there are quite some changes leading to an increase of RWA. At the same time, we will probably have also some reductions in RWA because of moving to the advanced models. So also there is an impact from the new IFRS accounting rules for pension assets. So we have set our target for 10%. Based on our current figures, we will be at 10.8%. And well, we expect to be above that 10% from January next year.
Maybe to follow up on that one, I might have missed it in the presentation, but did you quantify the impact of the IFRS or the IAS 19 on your Core Tier 1?
No, we didn't say that, but we can do that if
yeah.
you want to know.
Perfect.
According to the last calculation we made, but it's rather volatile. It's a negative impact of 0.7 billion. But the IFRS calculation for the pension asset is very much dependent on the spread on AA bonds. And we have seen quite some movements in the past year. So it's quite a volatile component of the new equity calculation.
Perfect. And on Dutch mortgages, your view going forward?
What kind of view do you want?
Well, basically, we have seen several banks issuing their forecast what will happen with the house price
for the next
few years. And maybe you might also elaborate on whether you see maybe a different impact on the mortgage book you have, or that we should take the average as is foreseen for the Netherlands.
Well, forecasting is a sport I used to be engaged in some years ago as the head of the Central Planning Bureau, and that made me very modest. But our economic bureau expects house prices to go further down about 8%. That will, of course, also have an impact on the collateral value with our mortgages. So we expect... the increase we have seen in the first half year to continue in terms also of impairments. Even if the default rate stays the same, the collateral value will get lower. So mathematically, you can calculate that in those circumstances, you will have to take into account higher loan impairments. I don't think our book is substantially different from the book of the other banks. So the effects will be more or less comparable.
Perfect. Thanks.
There are no further questions at this time, sir. Please continue. There are no further questions at this time, sir. Please continue.
Okay. Then we close the call. Thank you very much for showing interest in our welfare, although we are not listed yet and probably not for some time to come. So thank you very much and see you or speak to you on the next conference call.
Thank you.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.